With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Sandpits Radio, Australia's coolest podcast network.
Hey everybody, and welcome to another episode of Serious Issues. My name is Andrew Levins, and today we are doing a special episode all about JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, specifically the 8th volume of said adventure. Depending on how bad you are at reading and talking, it is either JoJo Lion or JoJolian. So we're going to be talking about that today. And joining me, clearly I needed someone who at least knew how to pronounce the fucking thing. So I have two experts joining me, coming back to the podcast for the first time in a short while. We have Chloe from the Wine Mums podcast joining again. What's up, Chloe?
I don't know how it's pronounced. You shouldn't have thrown me in the deep end like that. There's no lions in it, so I assume it's JoJolian, but I don't know.
This is an investigation in which we'll just three white dudes will decide how to pronounce this Japanese thing by the end of this episode. Because joining me for the first time is a very special guest who is staying up very late in Ireland right now. You may know him from the Let's Fight a Boss podcast. We have Brian.
Hey, how's it going? I have no idea how to pronounce anything. There's going to be so many mispronunciations this episode, so apologies in advance.
I'm going to try and mispronounce the most, so don't even try and come at my title. we've been, I guess, on and off reviewing JoJo's Bizarre Adventure on the podcast for the last year. I actually started reading JoJo's Bizarre Adventure at the start of the year, so this year was my year where I read all of it. It took over my life, and I have Chloe kind of helped me get into it at the start of the year, and gave me the ranking. And so Chloe, it'd be fun for you to revisit your ranking and see where JoJo Lion fits in on your ranking. And Brian, I'm keen to know where it ranks on yours too. But before we get into JoJo, I want to know what else you've been reading. Brian, you want to start with you?
Okay, I am reading a 4-volume series called Ressentiment, which is in French, but I think it just means resentment. And it is from an author called Kengo Hanazawa, who did 2 series that I really enjoyed. He did Boys on the Run, which I read earlier this year. That's from the late 2000s. And then he also did I Am a Hero, which is about a mangaka surviving a zombie apocalypse. That's what he wrote for the better chunk of the previous decade. And I'll probably read what he's writing next in a year or two and kind of waiting for it to build up. But Resentment, I don't know how to pronounce it. See, I told you, it's already going to be happening.
You can just call it Resentment.
French sublime, it's okay.
Yeah. Sorry, French people. I'm sure you're very offended all the time. This is a 4-volume series, and it's his first series that he did, and it was published in the early half of the 2000s, from 2004 to 2006, but it takes place in the near future, and it's about a guy who buys a VR headset and VR kit, the whole thing, and falls in love with a girl in a virtual world.
Hell yeah.
And it's very interesting from a kind of comparing it to, you know, contemporary technology and what it got right and what it got wrong. And for the most part, it actually got a lot of stuff right.
Like, is it like kind of Her, the manga?
It's a bit like Her. It's more like, I guess you know how people are into VTubers and it's like their weird little internet doll that they sort of covish. It definitely leans into that because Hanazawa, like every protagonist in his series, is always a overweight guy in his 30s who's down on his luck, isn't doing super good, and is kind of at his lowest, and a situation occurs. And so in this version, it's your protagonist who's just fallen in love with a virtual idol, essentially.
Yeah, awesome. And have you made your way through all of the series so far? Or?
I'm about halfway through-ish. It's okay. I love the like location artwork, but the character designs are a bit too cartoony for my liking. They don't really fit in with the rest of the world. It's got a charm to it, but sometimes it doesn't work.
So the majority of manga you read is seinen, like manga aimed at like a slightly older audience, which often means like in the 90s and 2000s just meant like edgier content.
As opposed to more mature
storytelling.
Like for me, I've read Gantz like 3 times, and so I'll keep going on recommendation sites to be like, what can I read as an alternative to Gantz to fill my Gantz-shaped hole? And you just end up kind of like falling down other holes from there, and they just sort of stem out. And so this was a 4-volume series, so I said, yeah, sure, I'll read it over the months.
Yeah, unreal. Recommendation, yay or nay?
Honestly, right now it's a nay, but let's see how it sticks the landing with the ending.
Damn, there's French people. That small amount of French influence really ruining this series.
Oh, yeah.
Chloe, how about you? What have you been reading?
I have caught up with the new Seven Seas release of Die Dark. I assume that's right. It's German, I imagine, but it's Kyu Hayashida's new book, who did Dorohedoro, which is like top 5 goodness, and this is her new series, which is kind of takes a bit from Dorohedoro, but what if it was set in space? It's basically about a teenager named Zahazenko who was immortal and has bones that will grant any wish in the galaxy. So he is perpetually on the run from people trying to steal his bones, and he has a best friend named Avakian, who is, imagine Clank, as in he's on Zaha's backpack for the entire time, but you can pull his head out of the backpack and it becomes a full skeleton man with guns and shit. And it is, this first volume is just sort of about them on their way across the galaxy. It does a little bit of their flashback. You learn a bit about kind of like the state of the galaxy. There is sort of like the galaxy as we know it, and then there is this dark realm where unless you were born there, you cannot see anything. It's just perpetual pure darkness, and it's like sort of a demon-y realm. And it is just sort of about them having a good time, and you meet a couple of other characters, like the god of death is in this, who is a typical Hayashida, incredibly buff woman who can turn souls into chicken drumsticks and doesn't eat the main character because they were friends. You know, they met when he was like a little kid and he was on a crazy spaceship full of like an orphan ship with a bunch of minders who turn into giant centipede monsters, and she was eating those and they were cool. It sets up sort of the villain of the series, which seemed to be like this, I don't know, like the exact era it takes. Okay, I sort of think about it. It's like that heavily sort of Catholic police state, like sort of like the medieval era where it's just people super into purity and they're going to kill everything that isn't pure.
The Inquisition.
Yes, that's the one. I've been stuck with that for like a month since I first picked this up. That is good to know. This first volume is a lot of setup and the second one gets a bit more into it. But the true joy of these works is kind of the same way in Dorohedoro. Should know how to pronounce that, but here we are.
This entire podcast is just going to be us like doubting ourselves every time we say anything, even our own names.
I'm sure I got all those names wrong too, but it's just the most great fun story about a friendship in just a fucked up world and just the most incredible art. If you chuck Die Dark into Google, you will just see these images of space, but everything's made out of flesh and bones, and their spaceship is like a giant meat dog, and they'll just be on like the death planet, which is just like these buildings of flesh and holes, and sometimes cubes and skulls, and a space station which has like these minders who, like I said, just like at night time just become a part of like a big humanoid centipede of like 100 different people, so they can go about their tasks when everyone is asleep. And it is just this constant clashing of like the brutal and the delightful that works so well, because there is a way she like draws her manga that never comes across as edgy. It's just that this is what her mind comes up with, and it is absolutely delightful. So if you want just like the best art and just good times in space with your backpack skeleton buddies and a god of death, Die Dark, it makes me so happy. It's a great release as well, I should say. Seven Seas can be a bit hit or miss with me sometimes, but this is like a really glossy release, really good paper quality in like a nice compact form.
Yeah, cool.
You love to see it.
Awesome. Well, I just signed up for a service called Manga Planet, which you can find at mangaplanet.com. What drew me to this is that I'm a big fan of the mangaka Nobuyuki Fujimoto, who is responsible for Kaiji, Ultimate Survivor, and Akagi. And I've read like a bunch of his works, but a lot of it has been extremely badly translated. And I kind of got obsessed with the guy who was responsible for doing all of the fan translations over the years. And he's like this guy that like dedicated like a decade of his life to translating the manga, and then kind of lost his mind and became a born again Christian and quit his job at Subway because he thought Pokemon characters were like actual devils, and then decided that just by translating the work of this like mostly gambling manga that he was doing like the devil's work. And so now he's renounced his ways and gone crazy, and now instead of translating manga, creates videos where he like apologizes for all the work that he's done and that he's going to do better, and denounces all these things that people should not denounce. So it's good to be able to read Nobuyuki Fujimoto's
so many sins
manga without knowing that the guy who translated it lost his mind. And the only way that you can do that, there are some official releases of the Kaiji series, but Kaiji and a few of his other manga series are in digital format, properly officially translated on Manga Planet. So you've got Gambling Emperor Legend Zero, which I'm really looking forward to reading, Gambling Apocalypse Kaiji, and another one. What was the one that I read? Oh my God, you remember all the manga I read. I can't remember.
Was it that one you were sending me photos of last night?
No, that's the one I'm going to talk about in a moment. It is, Nobuyuki Fujimoto. It's great because mostly he writes about like gambling, but this one is about a like hopeless loser. The legend of the strongest Kurosawa. I love all of his work. So having even more of them to consume without like the really terribly photocopied scan lines and bad translations is very exciting. So all of that is on Manga Planet. But I went through their library. A lot of it, it's mostly CNN, so I was pretty excited. Is it CNN or Seinen?
Seinen.
Casino, there you go.
I don't encourage you anymore. We'll just let it be.
There's been a few cool ones I'm looking forward to reading. Like there's something called Ragnar Chronicles, a very enticing looking book called My Favorite Carrera EV, which is about a girl who gets a new car. That looks really fun. But the book that jumped out to me was a book called Salaryman Kintaro, which may be familiar to some listeners because it that was turned into a movie in 1999, and the anime, I believe, was available in Europe and the UK pretty prominently in the early 2000s. Brian, I don't know if this is on your radar at all.
I have walked past this in Atari Records, yes.
So Salaryman Kintaro was published from 1994 to 2002. It's written and drawn by Hiroshi Motomiya. And it is about Kintaro, who is the ex-leader of a bikie gang with 10,000 members. But he gives it all up to start a family with a blind woman who unfortunately dies. But then Kintaro, kind of at a loss as to what he should do next, saves the life of a chairman at a big company in Japan called Yamato Construction. And the chairman is like, you know, you saved my life. I'll do anything, you know, that you ask me to. And he's like, well, I've always wanted to become a salaryman. Can I come and work for you? And so he gets on a boat and goes to the city and then starts working at Yamato Construction Company. And they just put him, all he does all day is sharpen pencils. But just in doing that, he meets everyone else at the company and has all these interactions with him where no one takes him seriously at first because he has long hair and he doesn't respect the hierarchy of people you should and shouldn't speak to when you are a low-level salaryman. But he has these interactions that all end up going quite positively, and he starts being quite influential at the company. But also, like, he's, you know, he has a very dark history and he is a fighter by nature. So he gets into a fight one night when the first night that they get their their first pay night, they go out and have some drinks, and a Yakuza member like pours a drink over him, and so he ends up beating the shit out of him, and then gets in trouble with Yakuza, who come through to Yamato Construction Company the next day and demand to, like, you know, speak to the boss. And it ends up like the head of the Yakuza was in the bikie gang that he was the head of many years ago, so like it ends up being like this like a respectful conversation and an apology. But yes, I've read two volumes of it. It's really, really funny and quite, like, I don't know, it's one of those ones that you can just lose yourself to pretty quickly. I think there are 30 volumes all up, and most of them are on Manga Planet. What's cool about it is they release, like, you know, multiple chapters each week as they translate them. So yeah, it's a pretty cool service. I recommend it, mangaplanet.com. If you need a new place to read legal manga, there's very few of them that are good, and this is definitely a good one, worthy of your time. But enough of that nonsense, because it's time to go on a bizarre adventure. Are you guys ready?
Oh yeah.
It's guaranteed at least more hits than our Akagi spoiler cast, so I'm in.
Yeah, do you know about Akagi, Ryan? The Nobuyuki Fukumoto, it's like 300 chapter long manga about Mahjong.
Oh my god.
That's usually the reaction.
That sounds very daunting.
I read it all and then forced Chloe to read it, and no regrets, right, Chloe?
Oh, like, no, it's the best. Best 260 chapter fight of my life.
So one like the first 40 chapters like tell multiple games. And then 40 chapters in, they start on this one big game. And over the course of 20 years of real time, as he was writing this manga, he tells the story of one night, one Mahjong game. It took him 20 years to finish the story. And the whole tale would have lasted maybe 6 hours of, like, in story time. Yeah. Great shit.
I really love that about manga, actually, because there's some arcs in Ice Shield 21 and they take place over 5 seconds of just characters on a field throwing a football around, but it's every single minutia of the play-by-play. It's amazing.
Yep. Yeah. And
there's,
like,
something
that's the thing,
so intense about it.
I know nothing about Mahjong, same as you probably know very little about the sports manga you've been reading, but you get so caught up in it. So yeah, when Salaryman Kintaro got invited to a Mahjong game in a recent chapter I read, I was very excited, but I was also disappointed that it only lasted one and not 260 chapters.
That's very meager of them. I don't know about that now. Yeah, it should be at least like 50.
So let's talk about JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, Volume 8, Jojolion. I'm going to try and pronounce it differently every time I say it. This began being published in Ultra Jump from May 2011 was when it started, and it just wrapped up at the beginning of August 2021. So over 10 years this went for, collected in 27 volumes with, was it 109 chapters?
110 total. Yeah.
Since Steel Ball Run, Hirohiko Araki has been writing longer chapters as opposed to your typical shonen length, which is normally like 20 page long chapters that appear every week. Araki yeah. will do one like 40 to 50 page long chapter a month. And so we've gotten 110 of those. It's the longest JoJo's Bizarre Adventure volume yet. And
I've got the page count here.
Oh, fantastic, please.
The total pages. Okay, first of all, try and guess how many pages do you think there are in JoJolion combined total?
Like, oh, damn, I don't know. Like 5,000?
You're saying 5,000.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're closer to 3,000. You're there is 4,741 pages.
I guess it wasn't too bad.
That's a lot of pages.
We'll call it an even win, okay?
Yeah. So normally I would kind of give a brief synopsis of what this story is about. It's about a man named Josuke who awakes one day without any memories, but with four testicles. And he's discovered by someone who falls in love with him eventually, or falls in friendship with him.
I absolutely ship those two. Josuke and Yasuho are definitely a couple.
Okay, cool. Yeah,
they're the best couple in all of JoJo's. Oh, yeah.
They're so cute.
Yes, definitely. And so in this book, they kind of... It's a mystery, and my favorite JoJo volume prior to reading this one was Diamond is Unbreakable. I loved the mystery format. I know it was very inspired by Twin Peaks. I loved that it was all set in the one town. As much as I love like the road trip nature of a lot of the other JoJo volumes, I loved that this was just exploring this weird town with a bunch of freaks in it, and fighting as many of those freaks as possible. And I thought this was a fun, like, there's definitely so many references to Diamond is Unbreakable in this. If anyone wants to take the reins and explain a brief synopsis of this,
Brian, on the latest Alpha, has some really cool like history on it as well, so I want to hear what he has to say.
Okay, I guess it starts off with two of the main supporting characters, which is Yasuho, who's the female lead, and then Joshu, who's kind of a secondary male lead, and it's them out by the outskirts of their town, Morio, which is the same town from part 4. Mm-hmm. But it's in an alternate universe because since part 7, it's in a different timeline. And they discover the unconscious body of an unknown man who has amnesia. And
four balls.
And four testicles, for some reason. And he emerges out of the ground, and all he has is a sailor's hat. And for the rest of the series, you never, ever see the top of his head. It's always covered by a hat. And they always go up with clever ways, because sometimes he has to take off his hat, but he will always be out of frame, so you never get to see the top of his head.
I didn't notice that the entire time reading. That's funny.
It's very important. And, like, this is the second... Well, like, I guess with Jotaro, he has his weird hat hair as well. And sometimes he'll take the visor cap off, but it has his hair attached to it. Like, it has... a part of his fringe. So, like, this is kind of an extension of that, where, like, it's the inverse, where, like, you will never not ever see him without the hash. And if he does have to take off his hat, it'll be cropped, so you never see the top of his head. Just because that's part of the mystery. But I guess the big mystery is that he doesn't know who he is, and it's 110 chapters of him navigating a town, I guess, over the space of a week. I'd say it's about 1 or 2 weeks total. The entire story takes place during the summer of 2011. And he meets a big cast of characters, and every character he meets, he's not sure if he could trust them or not. And so a big part of it is just, are they a friend? Are they a foe? And so every friendly he needs to encounter has to be a stand battle, which is pretty traditional for JoJo. And so it still has its kind of bad guy of the week, but it's done in a kind of, I guess, unfriendly, uncivilized way.
Yeah, he gets taken in by a family, and he doesn't know if he can trust anyone in that family, and everyone in that family also happens to be a stand user.
And they're very, very eccentric people.
Yeah. Have you got a favorite family member?
Jobin, who's the eldest brother. He is so cool. I love Jobin. He has a gold Ferrari. He's just, yep. he's got it all.
Gold Ferrari and multiple Beezles. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, that is maybe my favorite arc of the... If it's an arc, it's only a few chapters, but the stag beetle fight. I was I could absolutely read an entire manga that is just beetles fighting.
Entire 250 chapters.
Yeah, please, at least.
And it's just them with the brushes brushing the pheromones on the little mini sumo stand. Oh, it's so intense. At that bit where Jobin's stand pops out just for a second... And you're like, what the fuck is that? I also do like the youngest son, Joshu, who's just like the way I kind
piece
of
shit.
Yeah, he's an absolute piece of shit. And he keeps trying to almost redeem himself, and then he'll just completely backfire it by saying something really, really predatory or pervy. And you're just like, dude, what are you doing? And so I do like him, but it's really hard to have him as your favorite because he's so fucking problematic. But
he also
he's
has
a real
one of
special
the,
guy.
One of the stupidest stands in JoJo history, too.
Oh my god! And he's so bad at using it.
What can he do? He can make nuts and bolts go through objects or people's bodies, and then if he can undo the bolts and then make someone's arm fall off.
Yeah. He's basically the first half of part four Josuke's stand where he can just disassemble, but he cannot rebuild for shit because he's just not competent. He probably can rebuild. He's just so destructive that he can't. It just doesn't reflect in his stand. And there's two sisters as well. There's Daya, who's the younger sister, and then Kato is the older sister. Daya's the first member you're kind of introduced to properly. She's the first stand battle, and her ability, what's it called again?
King Bed.
Yes.
California King Bed.
Because I think they're all named after Elvis Presley songs. Yeah. I could be wrong about that, but I think a lot of the stand names in Part 8 are based on Elvis Presley songs. But yeah. Hers is pretty good. It's kind of similar to Alessi's stand in Part 3, except you have to step on her shadow, but it's really hard to step on her shadow.
Okay, I've just Googled this. California King Bed is actually a song by Rihanna.
Oh my God.
Same person, if you think about it.
Do you know what? I'm thinking of the the final stand, which is The Wonder of You. I'm pretty sure that's an Elvis song.
Okay. What if they're all Rihanna songs?
Oh, I'm just not a good Rihanna fan. Let's see. Yeah. Okay, I'm definitely right about The Wonder of You, so I'll take it. Then Kato, who kind of blossoms her stand fairly late. She's a fun character. She has a major role in my favorite arc, but we'll probably get to that in a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the dad, Norisuke, who's... very, very honest about stands, and I've never heard anyone say this in the JoJo series ever about Josuke just straight up goes to him and goes have you got a stand? And he's like, well, yeah, obviously I have a stand, but you know it's private, you wouldn't go around showing someone your asshole.
yeah
and it's such an honest line. Way and it's like well yeah like I'd say a lot of people have stands, it's just it's none of your business. It's a very intimate thing to do.
His stand is called King Nothing, named after the Metallica song.
Yeah, I love his stand as well with the jigsaw puzzle pieces. Such a great design. Yeah. Then there's kind of the extra character. Sorry, well, there's the maid, Nejimura, who's kind of got the same surname as Okuyasu, but she's not who she seems to be. Then there's the mom. I can't remember the mom's name.
Kato. So she's Kato and the eldest daughter of Kato.
Oh, okay, yeah. She's very good, and I still wish we got to see more of her because she was so tragic.
Yes,
and I love her design. Who else is there? There's Jobin's wife and Jobin's son. Jobin's son in particular is very unusual because he was drawn very differently at the beginning when they did a family photo, and I think he was depicted as a baby, but then later on was rejigged
12.
to be like a tween who has to wear girl's clothes as a superstition to protect from the family curse, but he's just a horny little shit just like Joshu.
We forgot to mention that Joshu's stand with the nuts and bolts is called Nut King Call.
Oh my god. And then I there's Jobin's wife, but like to me she was kind of, she never really stood out to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember it now.
She has an energy stand where she can control the direction of forces. And so there's one particular moment where she's like, yeah, her stand is cool. Where the most notable thing I can remember is there's a bit where she's like chopping off vegetables and she accidentally cuts off all her fingers because of the calamity right. stand. But then she just uses her stand to just sort of like seal them back onto her hand again. Because she's kind of got like semi-healing, I guess abilities to her stand,
arrow power.
Yeah,
yeah. There was isn't someone's got a stand? Someone, one of the people they fight, their stand is called Doggy Style. That was great.
That's Mamizuka. Well. Yeah. Yep. But I guess the main stand in this is Josuke's stand, which is Soft and Wet, which is a Prince song, I think. And Soft and Wet is fucking brilliant. I love the design of Soft and Wet, where, like, it's got the nautical design where it kind of looks like an anchor, but it looks like a robotic alien anchor. And I guess the basis of the stand is that it has bubbles that can take the properties of something else, but it also has an additional combination from another stand where the bubbles explode.
Yep.
And so he can cause explosions, but he can hide the sound inside the bubbles. So it kind of works as this like stealth stand, but it's also extremely like volatile and destructive.
Yes, no, totally. And so yeah, the bulk of the enemies that Josuke is, like, obviously he can't trust a lot of people, so he's fighting everyone left, right and center, but the main antagonists that he's up against are the rock humans.
Yes, the rock men, which are kind of like a callback to the pillar men in JoJo Part 2. And at the beginning, they're very, very mysterious. But by the end, Araki has like taken time aside on certain chapters to explain like the biology of them.
Yeah.
And how, I guess, if we're carbon-based people, the rock men are silicon-based. And they age differently. Yeah, the wiki is very comprehensive. I'm looking at it here. it's something like, else.
Here's how they sleep. Here's how they can breed 97.5% of the times. Okay. Good to know.
Yeah, I think the problem when you binge a massive series like this, as opposed to reading it month to month and savoring every page, is that when he does throw like those pages and pages of lore at you, I'm just kind of like, I'm skimming it because I want to get back to the fight that the, you know, the rock human info dump is in the middle of.
Yeah. Oh, that lore is like, because like I think that's a thing that Araki does where, when he creates a character, he creates a very comprehensive backstory, and the majority of the time that is unknown to the reader, it's only known to him. But I guess with the Rockmen, he just got too excited. And just kind of had to kind of overload us with a lot of unnecessary information about them.
Yes. Yeah, so we fight lots of different rock humans throughout. I think my favorite is a guy who, his name is Damo. And
Damo, Damo Tamaki. Fucking brilliant.
Yeah, he basically poses as the boyfriend of Hato, the eldest daughter, and comes in and basically holds everyone in the house, including Josuke, hostage with his stand, which is called Vitamin C, named after the excellent Can song. And he can basically liquefy people after they touch an object that has his fingerprints on it. They kind of, their body turns to liquid, and he's just like this gross, greasy looking fuckhead.
the bit where they're like, please take a seat, and he sits into that like armchair and he's like too wide, and his ass just like blows it out, and then his like hair, like his hair comb over like unsettles, and you're just like, what's wrong with this guy? And it's such a bad first impression, but like that's exactly what he wants you to think, because it's all just like a front, because he's really, really clever and calculating.
That was my favorite Stan battle.
Oh yeah,
I think.
For sure. It's a really, really interesting part as well, because like that's like the exact midpoint of the whole series, and that's kind of when you learn Josuke's identity, and like a big half of the mystery is kind of revealed to the reader in a really, really fun way. And then you get that flashback, and it kind of flips between, you know, the present and the past, but it's the same character they're fighting against, and it's kind of the victory of one timeline and the loss of the other, but how, yes, you know, it all kind of culminates then in just this cool collaboration of a fight. And I really like that about JoJo, that a lot of the best stand battles are won by people kind of combining their stands together to kind of outsmart someone's overpowered stand.
Yeah, it's like watching someone play a puzzle game.
Yeah.
A point and click adventure and combining the, like, you know, the blender with the frog to overcome the great darkness or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think, yeah, this one, like, obviously coming straight into this after Steel Ball Run, which was it, like, that one throws you into the story instantly. And like, you know, you're aware of the world, you're aware of like what everyone's motives are, like, you know, that there is this race. It's a very easy to understand beginning to that story, whereas this is like, yeah, like it's a mystery. You have this guy appearing without memories, and slowly you meet other characters who he's not sure of, they're not sure of him. It took me a little bit to gel with this one, but once I did, like especially around that middle point, I was like, man, I think this is my favorite JoJo series. But you mentioned on Let's Fight a Boss this week, when you were talking about your general thoughts on the series, that Araki has admitted to writing this series as he goes along. Like, you know, he takes pride in not really knowing what's going to happen 10, 20, 50 chapters from now. And because of that, there are many things that get brought up early on in a series that aren't really ever concluded properly.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think with the mystery genre, plant and payoffs are incredibly important. Like, I think if you go back to something like Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who did Sherlock Holmes, there's so many like misdirections in those, and they're kind of like the DNA that's in a lot of contemporary mystery, where there's all these like plot threads or characters or just even like, you know, objects that don't get explained until like the last five pages. And so I think some readers were kind of being a bit too optimistic about certain things being resolved, but I think for the most part, and like I'm trying to think of like big spectacle TV shows like Lost as well, and like a lot of those shows, like they do have to leave certain mysteries unanswered because they've written themselves into a hole that they just can't write themselves out. And I think for the most part, it's like to write a mystery but wing it for a decade and have a satisfying ending is a huge success.
So one of the biggest ones that stood out to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, if this was resolved in a way that was meaningful, but early on in the book, Yosuke and Yasuo, is it her name? Yuasa?
Yasuo.
Yasuo, sorry. They go to someone's apartment that used to belong to... Because, yeah, Yosuke is the combination of two people. And they go to the apartment of his body, where his body belonged to, and they find photos in there of him doing, like, what is suggested to be, like, despicable sexual acts to somebody. Yeah. And was that ever kind of explained that, like...
I think what they wanted to do there was, that's a misdirection because we are familiar with this character in the original universe and the like awful crimes they've committed in that timeline. Can we get into that spoiler or
yeah,
should
like,
we...
okay, like, I mean I dare say I reckon that anyone who hasn't read it has gone shut the fuck they're talking about and yeah, tuned out by now anyway. But yeah, let's go full spoilers.
Okay. So I guess in the first 10 chapters he goes to a hat shop because the sailor's hat that he has on is very important. And the hat salesman calls him Yoshikage Kira. And he's like, who's that? And they go back to Yoshikage Kira's apartment. And if anybody is familiar with the series, Yoshikage Kira is a serial killer villain from part four. Mm-hmm. And for
he
the most part,
his hands off and takes them around with him.
And has a framed photo of the Mona Lisa. And the same person has like fingernail cuttings in jars and the Mona Lisa on the wall. And at this point, you just think like, okay, Yoshikage Kira is in the story again. And to an extent he is, but I think it's just a misdirection where he's in it, but he's just like a weird kinky guy. But I think he's, you know, a consensual guy. He's not like, you know, a serial killer like he is in the present day or sorry, in the alternate version in the original in part four. But I think Yoshikage Kira is meant to be the Jotaro Kujo of part eight, because they're roughly the same age and they're the son of Holly Joestar. Mm-hmm. And they line up that way, and I guess with Jotaro, like, he's probably the most famous JoJo protagonist, but I guess with Jotaro, he has a side to him where he's very cold and dismissive, and that's reflected in Yoshikage Kira as well, where he's just very dismissive of people, and kind of doesn't associate with people for the most part, keeps to himself. And so they're kind of using that personality of Jotaro Kujo, applying it to Yoshikage Kira, but we have kind of this misconception that it's going to be, you know, overly negative, whereas it's really just like a weird personality quirk instead.
Just a kinky, kinky man.
Yeah. just a very cultured person.
Were there any unresolved elements for you that were frustrating?
So yeah, I guess in the first 10 chapters again, in Kira's apartment, when Josuke's having that stand battle with the guy in the apartment one floor up, the guy the guy who has no fingers but he has prosthetic fingers, and there's a bit where Josuke gets like a memory flashback. And it's of a man who's now been referred to as the Flashback Man. And he doesn't look like anybody that ever appears in the series. Like, he kind of looks a bit like Jobin, because he's about Jobin's age. But, like, Jobin becomes a very different character. And Jobin has a lot of distinct, like, details on his face. And he has a hair clip that he has that nobody else has. And so it's just this character that never comes up again. And so to me, it's kind of like that bit at the beginning of Steel Ball Run where there's that guy who has like a tiny horse show and he has these 6-inch tall horses and it's never explained and you just have to be like, okay, sure.
Yeah. I think that's the, all those weird little bits that aren't explained is definitely part of the charm of JoJo overall. But yeah, when you are doing like this big mystery, I guess there is more pressure to explain things.
Yeah. There is another character as well called Carrera, who's got a stand called Love Love Deluxe. And so she's kind of like, who's the girl with the hair ability in part four? Koichi's girlfriend. What's her name again?
I know who you're talking about, but.
No.
Yeah. Maybe. Yukiko? Yukiko? Is that her name?
Let's go with yes.
Yeah, and so she's kind of
Yukako,
meant to be
Yukiko.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. I really, really love her in part four, and so
love deluxe.
And so it was cool to see her counterpart in part eight, but I kind of found what they did with her to be a bit underwhelming, where she just shows up for about 2 or 3 chapters, and she's kind of there to kind of drop information to advance the plot. But she doesn't, like, stick around as an ally, and I kind of wish she did, because Josuke does get an ally in the last third of the series, and I'm not into that character at all, and he stays around for the rest of the show, essentially. But I guess it's kind of like
which character is that?
Mamizuka. The plant appraiser.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Some people like him. I just never got into him.
I thought what they did with the stand was cool, but that is like
that's a doggy style guy, right?
Yeah, yeah. And his stand is kind of like stone free.
sticking point with a JoJo line, which is I like Yasuho, and I like a lot of the individual characters, but it never, like, kind of has that part four thing of just the most solid main crew that you're just so happy to always see together.
Yeah, there's no gang. No, there isn't. It's Josuke meeting people individually, but it seems like they don't have a routine or a life outside of him.
Yeah, I think that's why the fight against Damo is so good, because it really feels like, you know, he's taken the whole gang, like the whole family and Josuke hostage, and they all have to work together to beat him.
Oh, it's so good.
That's the strongest. That and the stag beetle fight. They're my favorite bits from this series. Should we talk about the ending? I guess like the end stand where we have this this stand who we think is an actual character for quite a few chapters, and then that it's revealed that character, this head of the hospital, is actually someone's stand.
Yeah. So the stand is called the Wonder of You, and the stand is originally introduced because I guess with any main villain JoJo stand, it takes several chapters to explain the mechanics. I remember in part 7, it's Funny Valentine's the main villain, and his stand is D4C, is it? Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
And it takes ages. It took like the better part of a year, I guess, serialized, to explain how that stand works with the dimension hopping and that it needs a flat surface to portal between.
Steel Ball Run is so good, and I really thought it was going to be my favorite until that. Like I found the explanation of his powers and the battle afterwards to be like such a drag after such a quickly paced series before it.
Yeah, yeah. And so you're introduced to the stand first, but the stand has an illusion projection on top of him, where it's a guy called Satoru Akatu, and he works at the hospital because they keep ending up going back to the university hospital. And I think he's like an 89-year-old man, and like he's well known in the hospital, and he gives speeches at medical conferences, and people talk to him, and like he exists, but it's a stand that people can see because the stand is so powerful that it has like a physical manifestation. And it's cool the way it works, because like for ages it's just a very old man with a scary face. And I guess he kind of looks like a fucked up version of the Monopoly man. Like he has the little monocle and everything, and he has the bowler hat, and he has a cane. Like he just looks real dodge. But then when you kind of get to see his true form and you see him as a stand, he just looks like a weird, like haunted clock.
Yep.
And
if you pursue him, basically like you're doomed because accidents befall you the longer you pursue him until you die.
Yeah, and it could be an inconvenience, like you walk into a glass door that you didn't realize was there because it was, you know, very well polished, or an airplane in the sky starts falling apart and a jet engine will start hurling towards your exact location. It's just this ridiculous god power calamity stand.
That last fight is like brilliant because it's so annoying but so good, just how often they fuck up. Like every time it's like the final shot and it just misses and it just keeps going.
Oh, it's so stressful. And the bit where like Josuke figures out that you have to indirectly do it, oh, it's so good. I really like as well that Josuke is so smart and he kind of figures out that the old man is actually a stand, but he can't pursue him, so he blackmails him and then just sits in a chair and just waits for like 6 months serialized. Like, and it keeps cutting back to Josuke, and he's just sitting on a fold-out chair with his arms folded as well, just waiting, because like he can't pursue this guy because they tried two arcs previous to pursue him and it just kept backfiring.
The big fight, I think, is a pretty satisfying one in terms of like comparing it to previous JoJo's.
Yeah.
But do we want to talk about like the greater world building that happens in the final two chapters of JoJolion? Like,
yeah, I guess so.
Steel Ball Run and stuff.
And then I guess like the lineage of characters beneath. Yeah.
It's a really interesting way to do an epilogue, because they defeat the big bad. And then the next chapter, you think you're going to get like closure on everyone, but it goes, no, 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 wait a second. And it takes you back like 60, 70 years to like early 1940s Japan. And it's the same town, Morio. And it's Lucy Steele from part 7. And she's part of the Speedwagon Foundation. And she investigates unusual occurrences. And Morio is one of those places. It's similar to what the Devil's Hand is that what it's called, yeah, in part 7. And so with Morio, there's the walleyes, and there's kind of like the unusual earthquakes and kind of what's going on in the ground around there. And that's kind of to do with the stone men that live in the area that kind of work the gardens, which you see very, very briefly, but it makes a lot of sense. And you're like, oh, I guess it's true. But you meet a character called Joseph Joestar, but he's called Joseph Umi. And they fight a guardrail on the side of a road.
Who eats their driver.
Yeah.
And makes them strip, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, they really didn't explain that. And it's called Radio Gaga, the Radio Gaga incident.
Yeah. So this is very amusing to get that when you are expecting some closure and like a wrap up of what's just happened in the main series, because it the first chapter like of these two ends on a cliffhanger where Lucy Steele's about to be eaten by a guardrail.
Yeah, and it's got the little like narrator like bumper at the bottom that says "Stay tuned for the final chapter next month," and you're like, what? But the pacing.
Yeah.
But then the last chapter is really good, and you're like, you know what? They wrapped up it as best they could. They kind of finish off that little flashback in a really satisfying way. They cut back to the present day, and things are going to be all right.
Yeah, and they tie everything up really well, because I like that, like, this, so much of JoJolion is influenced by the actions of what happened post-Steel Ball Run. The whole eye for an eye, like, what's it called? The swapping...
equivalent exchange? You know,
the equivalent exchange.
Yeah.
And then we learn that, like, how the hero of Steel Ball Run dies in maybe, like, the most tragic main character death. He, like, basically gives his... He is an equivalent exchange because his baby is killed.
Yeah. Because the son is still George Joestar, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then George had Joseph, and then Joseph had Holly, and then Holly had Yoshikage. It's so interesting to see that kind of like timeline, or I guess to see the family tree, but you could see where it like splintered off, and you're like, oh, okay. but then for the kind of the namesake, because the protagonist Josuke Higashikata kind of finally comes to terms with his new identity. But at the same time, he's kind of making peace with his two halves, because he's the combination of Yoshikage Kira and a character called Joseph Umi Kujo. Mm-hmm. And in a previous flashback, you see Joseph Umi Kujo, and he has the star-shaped birthmark on his shoulder as well. And I guess it's sort of implied, because Joseph Joestar in the original universe was kind of a tomcat. He was kind of... not the most faithful of husbands. And I kind of get the feeling that Joseph Joestar had Holly Joestar, you know, as within wedlock. But I get the feeling that Joseph Umi Kujo might be his illegitimate son. And so you kind of get this interesting combination where it's like part 4, where you have Josuke and you have Jotaro, and, you know, the nephew is younger than... Or the nephew is older than the uncle, and they kind of pair well together. But I guess in the part 8 universe, it's the nephew and the uncle character dynamic again, except they work so well that they became one guy. And that guy is just, he's at peace with himself, and he's ready to kind of live with his new family that he's kind of been through a lot of tough shit with. But they're all going to pick out a cake together.
Yeah, that's right. It's a great ending.
Yeah, it's a really sweet ending as well. Considering, like, I'm trying to think of like all the endings to the different JoJo's. Like, part 1 ends in tragedy, Part two ends good. It's got a very funny funeral. It's a lot of hijinks.
You think it's going to be a tragedy, but then it ends in a funny, like, gotcha moment.
Part three is happy, but it's really somber because of, like, the amount of people they lost. Part four is fucking hilarious. That ambulance bit is so good.
Part four is love everything about that.
What
four.
A fucking ending. Part five is good. Part five is, you know, like, it's a real hero's journey kind of ending.
It's important to have a character appear as a ghost in a JoJo series for me.
Yeah. Part six is incredibly tragic. Part six is real sad.
And then also confusing as hell.
Oh yeah, it is, yeah. Part seven's really sad, but then it has this weird, like, fuck you at the end, where it's like, and that little boy that Gyro was trying to raise awareness for died of a cold.
Like, okay, damn, sure.
Yeah.
So we know that the next. Oh, actually, before we move on, Chloe, have you got any closing thoughts for JoJo Lian?
I mean, I really loved it. I think the mystery worked in, like, a lot of different ways. Like, I love the setup of the plant and the Rockman, and that works super well across, like, the last 50 chapters.
We didn't talk about the plant at all, did we? The Lokakaka or the Roka
plant. Yeah.
And, like, it really turns into this weird gardening adventure for the second half. like the gardening is very important.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
Where's the tree? What did it grow off of?
And, like, the history of fruit in Japan as well, and how, like, fruit is traditionally given as a gift at funerals when someone has died. And, like, you learn a lot from reading these books.
Yeah, and just, I think at the end I was just really happy that Joshu keeps the baby arm. That was good.
Oh my god, that was brilliant. To me, that was kind of like a callback with Polnareff, because Polnareff takes a lot of damage to one of his arms. He loses a few fingers on one of his hands. And so it's that kind of thing where there's always one ally that kind of gets, like, paralyzed or amputated, or gets, like, something happens to one of their limbs. And so I guess in Joshu's case, he gets the equivalent exchange, and he just has a little baby arm.
Anything else, Chloe? Are we good?
No, I think. I love the stand designs. I think they're the coolest in the whole series.
And they're all amazing.
Their powers, like, people say this. I've heard the series called as, like, sort of like a chess match of, you know, action battles, but this one really feels like it because the amount of them that just don't act even as regular fights. Like, I caught up just as we started, like, because I had sort of started JoJo Line, and then I was going to wait to the end, and then someone told me they were fighting a doll's house, and I went, all right, I'm in.
Poor Tom.
Yeah, that was. We didn't even talk about poor Tom.
That guy. That guy's living the dream. Like, he's doing way better than Jobin. Like, Jobin wishes he was poor Tom.
And I loved all the flashback stuff as well, when you learn what happened to Josuke and Kira.
The bit where they're on the boat and Damo is there with the architect, and he's just so pissed about how long it took them to find out, because they had, like, compared the weight of the Lokakaka plant, or the fruit, and then he just starts taking out, like, 1,000 yen notes and just slicing them up a little bit, and, like, Kira tries to use Killer Queen's sheer heart attack ability. And, like, that thing was so dangerous in part four. And he just uses his stand and just, like, melts the wheel so it just turns to grease. And you're just like, no fucking way. That thing was such a problem. How?
Yeah. So we know that the next book is called JoJo Lands, or tentatively called JoJo Lands. Do we know anything else about it besides that?
Nothing at all. I was reading up on the break between, or, like, the gap between part seven and part eight, and it was only a couple months. I think part seven wrapped up in early 2011, and then part eight started then in the summer of 2011. So if this is wrapped up in August, it could potentially start by the end of the year. So there could be a new JoJo, which is kind of crazy, because JoJo to me feels like it's existed for so long, and there's specific JoJo's, and there hasn't been a new JoJo in over a decade. Like, what's this JoJo going to look like? Is he going to be a boy, a girl, someone we haven't even considered? Like, who is this JoJo?
Yeah, it's exciting. This JoJo's Bizarre Adventure is almost older than me. I think it's older than both of you, if I'm right about your ages. Are you guys younger than 87? Yeah. I know it's definitely older than you, Chloe. But yeah, it's crazy to think that Araki, who is in his 60s now, has just wrapped up a more than 10-year-long story. And the fact that he's even thinking about starting a new one is just like unfathomable to me. Like, have a break, man.
Yeah. He just really likes JoJo.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary. Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I gave you guys just a little bit of warning that I was going to ask you to rank or try to rank every part or every JoJo part. So I'll start. I'm going to go from the bottom to the top. So starting at the lowest, I'd put Phantom Blood, then Stone Ocean, then Battle Tendency, Golden Wind, Steel Ball Run, Stardust Crusaders, JoJolion is my second favorite, and my favorite is Part 4, Diamond is Unbreakable.
That's a good list.
Brave.
I like it.
Brian, you want to go with yours?
Mine would probably be Battle Tendency, then Phantom Blood, then Golden Wind, then Stone Ocean, Stardust Crusaders, Steel Ball Run, JoJolion, Diamond is Unbreakable.
Huge. Mine would be Stardust Crusaders last.
Oh my god!
So I refuse to accept this.
I love it, but like
that's what this is why I put, this is why I made Chloe go last.
But it's got an orangutan in it.
It's also got like a shit thrown baby, but
that's
like,
the best part.
Several dogs die a baby in like carousels as well, like twice.
I love it. It's still the best. It's just like, I think that one drags the most at times, which stops me from really loving it. Well, I think like the rest of them only drags for...
Oh, no, see, I find that... I reckon that's the best paced one.
Okay. Maybe I'm just like... I'm truly uncultured now. I've revealed myself.
No, I love it. I love it. So it's a brave, a big, brave statement.
Then Phantom Blood. Then Battle Tendency. It's a Golden Wind. Stone Ocean, Steel Ball Run, Diamond is Unbreakable, JoJolion up the top.
Whoa.
Wow.
A huge success.
Yeah.
Thank you, Araki. You've done it for me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm very, very happy that I've read this all this year. I just started reading Fist of the North Star as well, and it's funny, like, seeing how similar it is to Phantom Blood.
Yeah, because it was made as a response to that, and it was probably the editor being like, just do what they're doing and just do like a British thing on it.
Have you ever read Fist of the North Star?
I've only just seen it out of context, to be honest.
Man, it's
and
so
it's just
fun.
Mad Max, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But it's like it's unbelievably well drawn. The new Viz release for it. Yeah. They're like these gorgeous hardcovers. It's funny though, like, yeah, to have like such a beautiful, like beautifully hardcover bound version of such a stupid macho story. Yeah. It's great.
Have you got a favorite JoJo?
Oh yeah, Josuke from Four. I just like, yes, yeah. It's impossible not for him. He has the best hair. He has the stupidest, like, he's like Marty McFly, like, you know,
yeah.
Except instead of calling him chicken, if you say anything about his dumb hair, he gets so angry that he can't hold his anger back. But besides that, he's a relatively cool and calculated kind of character. I love his outfit, like the school uniform. And I just, yeah, I love how good he is at making friends. That's my favorite thing about the JoJo series. So JoJo Lian was a little disappointing in that regard, that I guess it would be hard to make friends if you didn't really know who you were yourself. So that is justified. Yeah. But Josuke in part four absolutely knows who he is, and he's very good at making friends.
I think my favorite...
Just with Okuyasu as well is like, it's the dream team. Like, yeah. He's not a JoJo, but you put the two of them together, it's just like, it's unreal.
He's the best boyfriend. He's amazing. I think for me, it's part eight. Josuke is my favorite JoJo. I love his design. I love the village people aesthetic of it. Like, because before I read it, I saw the cover and I was like, so is it about a guy that's on a boat and he just like sails around the place and kind of does stuff? And it's like, no, it's not that at all. And just his whole kind of him coming to terms with his identity, really, I love that about him. And just how kind-natured he is. And just like his weird quirks, like how he has to sleep under a mattress.
Yes.
Because he likes the pressure. He's just a really unusual guy. And I really, really like the gap between his teeth. I really like the nickname Gappy. I always call him Gappy.
He's also the sexiest, I think.
Oh, yeah,
like,
he is.
The sailor outfit, and like he loses the sleeves for a bit. They're very good.
He has a belly button on display all the time.
He's so when you're sexy, that's for sure. Yeah.
Oh, he's hot.
Chloe?
Yeah, part four, Josuke with Okuyasu. They're the two. They're the goats.
Yeah, man. So many good characters in part four overall. Yeah, it's funny. Like when you think about, like, I'm like still like blown away that you think that Phantom Crusaders is the worst one, because for me, like, that's when JoJo, like, Araki realizes what JoJo is for me. Like, the part one and part two, it's kind of like he's got the story, he knows what he wants to tell in the story, but doesn't really know what the greater JoJo series is capable of, and then suddenly it all just fits into place, and Phantom Crusaders kind of sets the scene for the following volumes as well.
Yeah, no, I do really love the family lineage thing, and how it's just them kind of fighting a greater evil that kind of erupts in a new form, but it's based on a curse from the past,
mm-hmm.
and so that just starts off with some dickhead vampire that just won't fucking quit. To just magic fruit.
Yep. if you could have any stand from the JoJo, every JoJo volume, what would you pick?
Who's got a good like teleportation stand? Like, who's got a convenient one?
You don't want one that's really hard to explain. So like when someone realizes you have powers, it's gonna just sit down for a while. I'll tell you how this works.
I actually would love D4C. I love the whole magician aspect to it as well. It's got a lot of function.
Yeah, I have to admit, like one thing that I was hoping would make a comeback was the perfect angle of throwing or doing things that happens in Steel Ball Run. I was hoping that was just going to be like a constant in JoJo series from now on.
Yeah, I kind of thought Spin was going to come back because it alludes to it for a second.
Yeah,
it does.
Yeah,
like Spin going to be the most important part. It's like, oh, you know.
The bubbles aren't bubbles. It's just a high frequency crescent that's moving so fast that looks like a sphere.
Yeah.
I think Paisley Park would be pretty useful, but I think the stand would terrify me. Paisley, like, more than any of the others, just being around would be...
Paisley Park is just like... It could destroy any catfish. It's amazing. And just like the amount of shit that Yasuho can dig up on anyone is, and the fact that it like evolves to the point that it just syncs with her, so she sees it like scanning in her eyes by the end.
Yeah,
it's so good. That's such a good toilet.
Yeah, yeah. That's amazing. Yeah, that someone's stand can be undone by a phone going in a toilet means it's not one that I'm rushing to get. I like what's her name? Stone Ocean JoJo, the being able to turn your body into string.
Stone Free. That's a great stand.
Stone Free. Yeah, good stand.
And just the fact that she can use it as a way to like choke people or kind of smother them and control them, but then she could also use it as a way to evade by just, you know, going full ribbon and just kind of slinking in underneath tight spaces and things like that. Like the bit where they're in the plane and she uses Stone Free to kind of survive an explosion is so good.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, there's a lot of really great parts in that that I think maybe like the anime might be a better way to tell the story than the manga did.
Yeah.
Do you watch all the anime series of JoJo?
Yeah, I do. But for me, the main thing is reading it in color. I can't wait to reread all of Part 8 in color, because sometimes it's really hard to tell what is going on and where are people in relation to each other in the perspective of the location in black and white.
Yep. Yeah, no, definitely. Especially in the more like hectic action scenes.
Yeah, and like, yeah, especially because a lot of characters are bleeding and they're losing a lot of blood. And it's kind of hard to tell, like, are they dying right now? Or are they going to be fine next week? Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, one thing I'm most excited for Stone Ocean, the animator, I want it to finish. I know I'm thinking 10 years ahead or whatever, but I want to know, because they've said that it's impossible for them to make Steel Ball run.
Oh yeah, horses are way too hard. Like,
and I want to know I'm hoping that by the time Stone Ocean's done, we have the technology for horses.
The only way they're going to do Steel Ball run is like they're going to have to film it all from the waist up and just like not have it's just going to they're just going to have the characters rocking up and down on a saddle. And like occasionally they'll cut to a wide shot, but it'll be very heavy reuse or some sort of CGI horse that has like a low poly JoJo stuck on it for a wide shot or something. Horses are so hard to animate.
Yeah. Oh yeah, of course. That's Brian's bread and butter.
Yes, I work in animation. Actually, last year I worked on My Little Pony.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. The hardest job of your life.
Yeah. Oh, it was a very complicated show. Those are some difficult horses.
Nah. They don't even run very fast.
No, nah, they're all like stubby. It was fine, and they're all the same rig. So it's just the same horse with just different hair and different accessories.
Damn.
Yeah. Is there a fight or moment from JoJolion that you were looking forward to one day seeing animated more than any others?
Oh. In part 7, there's a bit where Johnny and Gyro fight a guy that makes the left side of your vision disappear, isn't there?
Oh, man. Yes. Yeah, yeah.
He's another guy that has a steel ball, doesn't it? But his steel ball works that it obscures your vision.
Yes.
I really, really want to see how they do that in motion. And how they do it, like, visually, but also how they do it with the sound. Because it's got to have like this weird muffled effect to it as well. I'm just really curious about that stand and how it's just going to be done in animation.
Chloe, anything that you're looking forward to seeing animated?
Oh, it's lame, but like True Man's World. I want a good voice actor for Mandom. I want to see them perspectives in animation. I want that shit just to be the most hyped thing around. That's my favorite fight from Steel Ball Run. It's unreal.
Cool. Awesome.
And Beetle Fight.
Yes, yeah. Obviously Beetle Fight.
Beetle Fight 30-32.
Yeah.
Well, that is it for our big JoJolion episode. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope if you haven't read it and you've somehow made it this far, we've convinced you that it's something you should be reading. Highly recommend reading all 8 volumes of JoJo in 6 months if you're able to, like I did. For something that it does rely on fan translations, I think the fan subs are pretty good. Translations, whatever you call it, yeah. I've read a lot of really bad ones in the last year, and JoJo across the board is pretty good. If you would like to hear Chloe's podcast, look up the podcast Wine Mums, and Brian can be heard on the fortnightly podcast Let's Fight a Boss. Is there anything else either of you would like to plug?
I've got a new episode out, which is something I usually don't say when I come on here, but Rebecca's on that too, previous guest of the show.
Yep.
On here. Yeah, and thanks for having me on. Lovely to meet Brian, the only other person I know in this world who's read Ikigami, Ultimate Limit. So that was...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, it was an honor.
That, I really enjoyed it. I'm still thinking about it. Fantastic series. So
just looks to my right, see it on the shelf, you know? Yeah. Just reminded me. That's it for me, though.
Brian, you got anything to plug?
I got nothing to plug. Just that wherever you are, please take care of yourself.
Excellent. I meant to tell you that I went for a run before we recorded today and I saw a frog.
Oh, lovely. I love frogs. So someone asked me before, like, Brian, do you prefer hedgehogs or frogs? And I was like, well, frogs during the summer and hedgehogs during the winter. Obviously.
Yeah, it was this tiny little green one. Gorgeous. Okay. Gorgeous frog. So that's it for the episode. You can find me online at LevDog, LevDowg, on Instagram, Twitter, everywhere else. And my other podcasts, Hey Fam and All the Small Games, are both on the Sans Pants Network, where you'll find this one. You can join our Facebook group if you want to discuss comics with us, facebook.com/groups/Serious Issues Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks to Brian and Chloe, and we will see you next week. Bye.
Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.